If you think about the natural world, maybe the random way sound waves dissipate across a room, or just the unpredictable churning of air currents, we instinctively connect that kind of complexity, that chaos, with, well, absolute untamable randomness.
That's absolutely the typical state of things. But for mathematicians, the real thrill comes when these systems driven by constant, unpredictable noise, suddenly decide to behave in an extremely calm, simple, or critically unusually smooth way.
That rare event, that moment of unexpected order popping up out of the chaos, that's exactly what we're diving into today. We've been immersed in a pretty deep stack of dense academic material, all concerning the stochastic heat equation, or SHE.
Right, SHE. And our mission really is to pull out the core mathematical insights about something called small ball probability, which is, the probability that a random process stays exceptionally close to zero, or in this case, exceptionally smooth. The SHE we're looking at describes a random field. You can maybe imagine it as the temperature distribution, let's call it $2, on a constrained space.
I like that analogy, a constrained space. Let's make that a bit more concrete for you listening. When the sources talk about the solution existing on a one-dimensional torus, what are we actually visualizing there?
Okay, yeah. Think of it like a metal ring, or maybe a closed loop, the heat ring. So heat is spreading around it, but because the space is finite and, well, continuous, it has periodic boundaries, what happens at one end immediately affects the other. And this whole system is being constantly stirred up by what the sources call space-time white noise. That's the W term.
Okay, so maximum chaos driving this random field on a ring, and we're asking, what's the probability it looks like it's, I don't know, taking a break? What's the chance this random field turns out to be exceptionally regular?
Exactly. That's the fundamental question. But to answer it, we obviously need a precise way to measure regularity, a measuring stick.
Okay, let's unpack that then. How do these sources actually quantify smoothness in a system that's supposed to be inherently chaotic?
They use something called Holder semi-norms. Think of these as quantitative measuring sticks. They're designed specifically to gauge how close a function is to being perfectly flat or constant. The smaller this norm value is, the smoother the solution looks.
Right. And because the solution, this temperature doll, changes both over time and across space on the ring, we presumably need separate metrics for each of those dimensions.
That's exactly right. We have two key measures for smoothness. First, there's the spatial semi-norm. You can think of this one as measuring how rapidly the temperature changes from point to point along the ring, but at a single fixed moment in time. So if this measure is small, the heat distribution across that whole ring is very smooth, spatially speaking.
Got it. So high spatial regularity means like no sudden temperature spikes or big drops as you move around the ring at that instant.
Precisely. And the second measure is the temporal semi-norm. This one looks at how quickly the temperature changes, but at a single fixed point on the ring over a period of time. If this measure is small, it means that specific spot is maintaining a remarkably stable temperature, even with all that white noise stirring things up.
Now, you mentioned earlier that solutions to the SHE usually have some baseline level of smoothness anyway. They're typically Holder continuous, right? With certain exponents like 1/2 minus epsilon in space and 1/4 minus epsilon in time, something like that. So why is studying the small ball probability so different? What makes SBP special here?
Because SBP looks at the tails of the probability distribution. It's focusing on the extremely rare events. When we talk about SBP, we're asking about the probability that these norms are exceptionally small, way smaller than usual, meaning the system is showing a level of smoothness far beyond what you'd mathematically expect. And this is, well, it's a very challenging area. Historically, almost all the detailed small ball analysis was confined to much simpler processes, things called Gaussian processes, which have a lot of nice mathematical structure. Applying this kind of detailed analysis to this stochastic heat equation, especially when it's nonlinear, that's really quite groundbreaking.
Okay, and here's where it gets really interesting, listening to the sources. This is where they seem to draw a very sharp line. The entire outcome of the research, like whether the mathematical description they get is perfect or just near perfect, it seems to hinge entirely on one specific choice. It's about the noise coefficient, right?
This sigma, yes. That's the absolute crux of it. It's the difference between what we might call the controlled world and the complex reality. Does the strength of that white noise stirring the system represented by sigma null, does it depend on the solution, the temperature itself? If sigma doesn't depend on Voon, we are in this controlled, predictable Gaussian world. But if it does depend on Do, then the noise feeds back into the system. It becomes nonlinear, non-Gaussian, and much harder to handle.
All right, let's start with the easier one then, the controlled world, the Gaussian benchmark. This is where that noise coefficient sigma is just some constant, or at least it does not depend on the temperature distribution then.
Exactly. When sigma is independent of dew, the solution field dew becomes what's known as a Gaussian random field. Mathematically, this is the cleanest possible scenario you can have here. And in this case, the researchers really achieved the absolute best possible result. They found matching upper and lower bounds for the small ball probability. And that's true for both spatial smoothness and temporal smoothness.
Matching bounds. So they nailed it down completely. They know exactly how rare these super smooth events are. They found the optimal description.
That's right. The SBP is characterized by this exponential decay. Specifically, it looks like Z$DANASTAY. Now, the exact variables aren't the main point for us, but the structure is. This exponential form tells you extreme smoothness is indeed rare. And that specific exponent, the $3 theta part, quantifies exactly how that rarity scales with the level of precision, epsilon, you're demanding. And the key methodological nugget here, these perfect results depend heavily on very specific dedicated tools. Things like the Gaussian correlation inequality powerful techniques, but they only work when the system is purely Gaussian.
That makes sense. You have specialized tools, you get specialized perfect results for that specific case. But what happens when the chaos isn't just external noise hitting the system? What if it's driven partly by the system's own reaction to the heat? What happens in the non-Gaussian reality?
Well, when sigma depends on 2, we enter the nonlinear zone. And the mathematical analysis instantly becomes immensely harder. The system just doesn't follow the nice, neat rules of Gaussian statistics anymore. So the results they obtain for this non-Gaussian case, the sources describe them as near optimal, but not sharp.
Near optimal, but not sharp. Okay. And what's the telltale sign of this lack of sharpness? Is there like a signature in the math and the bounds themselves?
Yes, there is. It's the presence of an extra term, specifically a factor involving the logarithm of epsilon, log epsilon. Remember, in the Gaussian case, that kind of logarithmic term just isn't there. The pure exponential decay tells the whole story. But in the non-Gaussian upper bound, this extra logarithmic factor pops up, and it makes the bound slightly looser than what theory suggests might be the absolute ideal.
What is that extra epsilon term? What does it physically or mathematically imply? Is it telling us something real about the chaotic system itself, or is it maybe, you know, a limitation in the mathematical tools being used?
That is the essential critical question here. Mathematically, it seems to appear because the researchers had to ditch those specialized Gaussian tools. They had to rely instead on more general techniques for non-Gaussian processes. Things like approximation procedures, estimates involving auxiliary random variables. These general techniques give you control, sure, but they seem to introduce this logarithmic fudge factor, as you put it. It's essentially the mathematical price you pay for dealing with that non-linearity, kind of a measure of the complexity that the current tools can't perfectly smooth out.
I see. So it might be like a limitation of our current mathematical telescope, perhaps. Not necessarily a fundamental feature of the distant star we're trying to observe.
Precisely. That's a great way to put it. Right. And the sources offer a really fascinating clue that actually supports that perspective. They found a crucial sort of partial bridge connecting the two worlds, the Gaussian and the non-Gaussian.
Okay, tell us about that. This middle ground sounds important.
It's a major insight, yeah. The researchers demonstrated that the sharp lower bound, the one that perfectly matches the optimal Gaussian result at bound, can actually be recovered. If the Lipschitz coefficient, dealers of the nonlinearity sigma, is sufficiently small.
So if the nonlinearity is just a weak effect, like if the dependence of the noise strength sigma on the temperature dollar is very mild, then the system still behaves, mathematically at least, pretty much like its simpler Gaussian cousin.
Exactly. And this strongly suggests that the real barrier, the true obstacle to getting those optimal bounds in the general non-Gaussian case, is the strength or the degree of that feedback loop, the strength of the non-linearity itself. Yeah. Weak non-linearity seems manageable with the current mathematical machinery. Strong non-linearity forces us into this near-optimal territory.
Right. And just to quickly close out the findings on the bounds themselves, the analysis for the combined space-time smoothness that just follows directly from what they found separately for space and time?
Yes, essentially. The full space-time holder semi-norm result is synthesized by combining those hard-won insights from the individual dimensions. It shows a kind of unified theory of regularity or unusual regularity for the SHE.
Okay, let's pivot slightly to the implications then. if we connect this to the bigger picture, beyond just finding these bounds, which is already impressive, these results seem to reveal some fundamental relationships within the SHE. What stands out to you as maybe the most significant insight this research reveals about the SHE itself?
For me, it's the deep interdependence they highlight between spatial and temporal regularity. The technical arguments they use, the proofs laid out in the source material, they clearly indicate something crucial. For the solution to be smooth in time, so for that fixed $0.6 on the ring to maintain a stable temperature, it's absolutely necessary for the solution to also be regular in space, across the whole field. You just can't seem to get temporal stability without having broad spatial smoothness occurring at the same time.
Huh. That makes a lot of intuitive sense, actually. Like, a chaotic system can't just magically pause its fluctuations at one single spot.
Right.
Unless the entire environment surrounding it has also, maybe temporarily, settled down.
Exactly. And this detailed analysis of small ball probability, it doesn't just stop there. It leads directly to some really practical, powerful mathematical applications. The sources call these support theorems.
Support theorems. Okay, so what does a support theorem let us do that, say, the standard SBP analysis we've been discussing doesn't?
Well, standard SBP basically asks, what's the chance the random field of water is nearly flat or very close to zero? Support theorems, they change the question quite significantly. They allow us to estimate, to provide bounds on, the probability that the solution APRA stays close. Close in terms of smoothness, measured by these semi-norms, stays close to some arbitrary smooth function, let's call it $, that we define. It shifts the focus from asking approximation to asking approximations.
Wow, okay, that is a big leap in utility. So if I'm studying a system where I expect it to follow a certain pattern, like say Imbert-Dahler represents a perfect linear drop in temperature from hot to cold across the ring, a support theorem would let me quantify the probability that the actual noisy real-world heat field dollar manages to mimic that idealized map Waller.
Precisely. It helps define the probable support of the solution, basically, the set of functions that the random field dollar is actually likely to resemble or approximate. And if your dollar itself is just a known, nicely smooth function, the SBP for the difference here and often looks quite similar to the general SBP case, approximation.
But what if that target function, a dollar, isn't perfectly smooth itself? What if it's only, say, somewhat smooth?
Right, that's where it gets more intricate. If dollars is only Holder's continuous, meaning it's defined by its own smoothness indices, maybe gamut in time and Bollinger in space, then the math, or particularly the lower bounds on the probability, gets quite complicated. The resulting bounds become extremely sensitive to how smooth the dollars itself is. You start seeing terms in the bounds where the exponent of $1 epsilon explicitly includes those spatial and temporal exponents from dollars. It clearly shows that the probability of the random field managing to match a template dollars, well, it depends very heavily on how demanding that template dollar is in terms of its own inherent smoothness.
So we've gone on quite a deep dive here into the stochastic heat equation. We've learned that figuring out the probability of this randomly driven heat behaving in a surprisingly regular way, it really depends entirely on how the noise interacts with the system. Is the noise source independent? That's the simple Gaussian case where we get optimal bounds. Or is it tied to the system itself via feedback? That's the complex non-Gaussian case leading to these near optimal bounds. And the difference between getting optimal and near optimal results seems to boil down to the power of our current mathematical tools when they face that kind of self-referential complexity.
Exactly. And this raises a really important question, one the authors explicitly flag as open for future work. While they achieve those perfect optimal bounds in the Gaussian case, and they show that if you restrict the nonlinearity, make it small enough, you can partially recover those optimal bounds. The general non-Gaussian bounds still remain only close to optimal, particularly that upper bound with the log factor. So the fundamental challenge is still out there. Is that logarithmic term in the non-Gaussian upper bound truly necessary? Is it a real feature?
Mm-hmm.
Or can mathematicians refine the techniques, develop new tools perhaps in future work to achieve the truly optimal small ball constant for general non-Gaussian SPDEs? You know, finding that exact constant dollars in the exponent.
Right. That quest to finally close the gap between what the physics or maybe the intuition suggests should be true and what our current mathematics can rigorously perfectly prove. That pursuit of the exact optimal constant governing rare events in a chaotic world, that certainly remains a major frontier for researchers trying to fully master the sharp behavior of these complex stochastic processes.